Okay, welcome to the Shir in Sfarno, Parshas Vayigash. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Ilui Nishmas, Chaim Dob, Reb Shlomo HaKohen, Mr. Herbert Greenberg, who was a lifetime Lower East Sider, and his yard site is tonight, and the Neshama should have an aliyah. Should see much nachas ruach in the Torah mitzvah and Maisim Tovim that the entire family is involved in. In Perek Mem Zayin, the Torah describes how the family of Yosef HaTzadik, after having come down to Mitzrayim, meets with Paro. So in Perek Mem Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, we read, Pasuk Beis rather, Miktzei Echov Lokach Hamisha Anoshim, from some of his brothers, Yosef took five men. Again, we know it's Machlokas in Chazal, which of the five brothers he took, but he took five of his brothers, Vayatzigeim lifnei Paro, and he presented them to before Paro. A little bit later on in the Perek, Pasuk Zayin says, Vayove Yosef es Yaakov Aviv. Yosef brought his father Yaakov, Vayamidehu lifnei Paro, and he had him stand before Paro. So as Rabbi Kuperman explains in his notes, again the Sfarno we'll see is very terse, but the Sfarno seems to be bothered by the slight discrepancy in terms of how the presentation of Yosef's brothers is described versus the presentation of Yosef's father, of Yaakov Avinu, is described. On the one hand, Vayatzi Game, he presented his brothers before Paro. On the other hand, when it comes to Yaakov Avinu, Vayamideyu lifnei Paro, he had him stand before Paro. So the Sfarno makes the following comment. With regard to Yaakov, it says, "V'lo hishtachava lo bevo'o v'lo betseiso." The fact that the Torah describes Yaakov's meeting with Paro using the word "vayamideyu," that Yosef made him had him stand, implies that at no point during the encounter—not when entering the palace, not when leaving the palace—at no point did Yaakov Avinu prostrate himself, which you would think would be the normal way that a person would come and present himself before a king. I mean, after all, he's being brought in to present himself before really the mightiest king in the world at that time, you know, Paro, king of Egypt, a major superpower. And Yaakov Avinu doesn't prostrate himself, doesn't do ishtachavayo, vayamideyu lifnei Paro, as opposed to the brothers who apparently did prostrate themselves, as would be expected. Yaakov Avinu remained standing up during the entire time of the encounter. And these few words that the Sfarno calls our attention to, again, would seem to be symbolic. The Sfarno has told us how so much of Sefer Bereishis is supposed to be symbolic of the later history of the Jewish people. When Yaakov Avinu comes into contact with even the greatest non-Jewish power in the world, lo yichra v'lo yishtachave. He doesn't bow down. He doesn't prostrate himself. There's a and Paro apparently doesn't call him out for that. Paro doesn't give him a hard time and say, "Old man, what you doing? You know, get down." Nothing like that happens. You know, there's a recognition even on the part of Paro that Yaakov Avinu is this very, very special individual, and it makes sense for him not to bow in the presence of Paro. The Torah then goes on to describe how Yosef takes care of the land of Egypt. Vayichalkel Yosef es Aviv, later on in Pasuk Yubeis, Yosef supported his father, Vyesechov, and his brothers, Vyeskol Beis Aviv, and all of the house of his father. Lechem lefi hatof. He gave them bread in accordance with the taf, in accordance with the children. What does this mean? So the Sfarno understands as follows. We're talking about Yosef's own family. And you would think that when it came to his own family, they would have a little bit of protection with Yosef HaTzadik, who was the second in command in Mitzrayim, and essentially was in charge of all of the distribution of food. I mean, as the Pasuk says earlier, Hu hamashbir l'cholam ha'aretz. Yosef HaTzadik was the one distributing food to everybody in the land. So you would figure that, you know, Yaakov's family would have not only bread, but, you know, they'd have cookies and crackers coming out of their ears. You know, they'd have a huge amount of food beyond anything that they could possibly imagine. And yet the Pasuk says that he gave them lechem lefi hataf, he gave them bread in accordance with the number of children, which the Sforno understands to mean that he rationed it. He gave them what they needed. He figured out how many people were in each family. And he gave them that. He didn't give them more than that. So afo pisha hoyo biyodo laharbos lohem mozom, he could have given them a lot of food. Nosan lohem b'mido maspekas, he gave them what they needed, and he didn't overdo it, notwithstanding the fact that they were his family, and Yosef presumably could have gotten away with it easily, and no one would have called him out on it. Why is that? Ka'omar zichrono levracha, and Chazal tell us, says the Sforno, that the conduct that Yosef engaged in was correct, or perhaps to put it differently, Chazal saw in Yosef's conduct a model for what they would recommend for the future generations. Bisman shad sibur shoroi b'tsa'ar, when the community is suffering, al yomar odom eilech levesi v'ochal v'eshte, let a person not say, no, I have food at home, I have drink at home, let me go home, I'll eat, I'll drink, you know, everyone else can do whatever they want, shalom alayich nafshi, and, you know, I'm fine, I don't have to worry about everybody else. A person has to be mishtatef b'tzaron shel rabim, a person has to feel the pain of the greater community, of the greater society. So even though Yosef could have given more food to his family, and no one would have said boo about it, nonetheless, there was an important lesson to be learned over here, that they should suffer together with everybody else, even if they have the wherewithal to be able to get more than everybody else. They shouldn't take advantage of that protexio that they might have had. A similar ethical message is seen by the Sforno two psukim later. It says, "Vayilaket Yosef, es kolat kesef hanimso ve'eretz Mitzrayim ve'eretz Kanan basher ve'ashem heim shovrim." Again, as we saw in last week's parasha in Miketz, Yosef was directly involved in the transactions where people were buying food. He ended up, all of the money ended up in his office, and in fact, then he collected all of the money that was to be found in Mitzrayim and in Eretz Yisrael, on account of the transactions that people were giving him money. Vayove Yosef es hakesef beis haparo, and Yosef brought that money to the house of Paro. What's significant about that? So comments the Sforno, shelo hora la'atzmo heter b'chol amolo lo kachas dovar la'atzmo. When he took the money to the house of Paro, the implication is, says the Sforno, that he took 100% of the money which he collected to the house of Paro. Whatever he collected, he passed on to Paro. There was no concept of taking a cut. You know, there was no concept of, you know, a third of this money rightly goes to Yosef, because after, and it wouldn't have been an immoral, unethical argument if you think about it. I mean, Yosef could have taken a fee for administration. You know, after all, he was working hard in accumulating all of this money, dividing up all this money, you know, accounting for all this money. He could have taken an administrative fee. Nobody would have called him out on that. But Yosef felt that that wasn't the right thing. In other words, if we're taking in the money, if I haven't been told by the by Paro, by the government, that I'm entitled to an administrative fee, I'm not going to take an administrative fee. I'm the administrator, right? I could probably decide myself to take an administrative fee. No, that's not the right thing to do. You're collecting the money, you're taking all of the money. And again, we see from the actions of the Avos and the early leaders of Klal Yisrael this tremendous commitment to integrity. We mentioned yesterday that the Sforno was a doctor. He continues analyzing the distribution policies of Yosef with regard to the food from a medical perspective. Pasuk says in Yud Zayin, which is to read a little bit before that, so as the Pasuk describes in Tesvov, Vayitom HaKesef, the money ran out, people didn't have money to be able to buy food anymore. Vayavol Chol Mitzrayim El Yosef Leimor, Havo Lanu Lechem, V'loma Nomos Negdecho. All of the Egyptians came to Yosef and they said, give us bread. We don't have money to buy the bread, but we don't want to die either. Ki afes kasef. There's simply no money that we have to purchase it. Vayomer Yosef, havu miknechem. So Yosef says, okay, so give me your livestock. Vayoviu es miknechem el Yosef. So they bring their livestock to Yosef. Vayitein lohem Yosef lechem basusim. So in exchange for their horses, for their livestock, Yosef gave them bread. Vayinahalem balechem b'chol miknehem b'shona hahi. And he was menahel them with bread in exchange for all of their livestock during that year. What's the word vayinahalem? So Rashi writes, vayinahalem kimo vayinahagem. He led them. He led them. We call the principal of an institution a menahel, right? Because he's the one who guides the ship. So he led them with bread during that year. But what does that mean? So he led them with bread? What's the connotation? He gave them bread. What do you mean he led them with bread? So the Sfarno writes as follows. And again, I don't think this is meant as in distinction to Rashi. I think it just elaborates on the idea that he led them with bread. Nihalom la'at. The implication of leading with bread is that he led them slowly. Ki'inyan alos yinahel. The pasuk in Yeshaya talks about how the young sheep are guided slowly by their shepherd. And what does that mean? Nosan lohem halechem me'at me'at. Echol velo l'sova. Although he distributed the bread to them during this year of famine, he did so a little bit at a time. That's by yinahalem balechem. He gradually gave them a little bit of bread at a time, enough that they'd be able to eat, but not so much that they would overdo it. Karoy b'shnei ra'avon, as is appropriate during years of famine, ka'amram, as Chazal say, Gemara in Tainus, Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, hamariv atzmo b'shnei ra'avon, nitzo mimisa meshuna. If a person starves himself during a year of famine, you say, that's not a big trick. Of course you're going to starve yourself during a year of famine. The point is, you know, that even if you have food, during a year when food is scarce, you should eat the food gradually, a little bit at a time. Don't overdo it with food. And if you do overdo it with food, Rachmana Litzlan, implies the Gemara, the person could end up killing themselves. And he adds, and again, this is where the Svarno as the doctor comes in, Ukvar amru chachmei harefua. Doctors tell us, the wise men of medicine tell us, shahasova achar ha'ra'av goreim choli meimis. That a person who stuffs himself after experiencing a period of hunger can, rachmanu litzlan, kill himself through that very sudden intake of a tremendous amount of food. So Yosef, even when he was dealing with the people and dealing with the famine that they were all going through, tried to do so in a way that was wise. Vayinahalem balechem. He gave them food very gradually, a little bit at a time. He didn't want to overdo it. We've already seen, we saw it in this week's parasha, we've seen it again as we referenced yesterday, back in Parshas Noach, the Sfarno's conviction from a medical perspective that gradual is always the best way to do things. Sudden changes are not helpful at all. Sudden changes in climate are not helpful at all. That's the Sfarno writes in Parshas Noach with regard to the Migdal Bavel. Sudden changes in emotion are not helpful at all. We saw that in the Sfarno yesterday. That had Yaakov Avinu totally believed from the beginning that Yosef was still alive, that might have killed him on the spot. It's because he was a little skeptical and because he was still concerned about other things that he was able to absorb the news. It was a little bit at a time. And here we're saying, from a culinary perspective, from a physical perspective, a sudden transition from famine to being stuffed is also not a healthy thing. And you know, that sudden transition, Rachmanu Litzlan, can kill the person. Right? There are many, many stories of people who survived Nebuch, the Holocaust, and were liberated from the camps after the war. And, you know, the Allied armies came in, they gave them chocolate, they gave them all kinds of delicacies. And people ate those, and they died. Because they were so, their digestive system was so unused to that kind of food that the sudden transition literally killed them. It's Rachmanis, people who survived the war and survived, you know, all of the atrocities of the Nazis. Lo aleinu, met their ends unwittingly through the actions of the Allied soldiers who were really just trying to help them, but in the end of the day killed them. It's the Svarno. The Svarno is saying exactly that point. The Svarno, you know, hundreds of years before. If a person is used to not eating an awful lot, to give them a lot of food right from the beginning, Rachmana Litzlan could actually kill that person. Just to point out that the Svarno over here takes a position in terms of reading this parasha, which is different from the position of Rashi. And Rashi's position, we'll see, is based on the Midrashim. The pasuk we just quoted says, "Vayenahalem balechem bashono hahi," that Yosef gave the people of Mitzrayim a little bit of bread at a time during that year. What year is that? Achar she'ofes kesef, during that year, after the money had run out. Remember, that was the story. They didn't have any money to purchase food anymore. So they said, "Let's give our behemos. You know, we'll give our animals, you know, to Yosef." And ultimately, they give themselves and their land to Yosef and to Mitzrayim. V'hi hoiso hashona hashishis l'shnei hora'ov. This was the sixth year since the famine began. That indeed is the simple pshat when one reads this parasha. When Yaakov and his sons came down to Mitzrayim, as indicated in the pasuk, the famine had already been going on for 2 years. That's the pasuk earlier in the parasha. Kizesh nosayim harav bekerev haaretz. And it sounds like, just from the presentation of the psukim, that as the years went on, obviously the famine got worse and worse. And, you know, during the sixth year, the people ran out of money. They didn't have any money to pay anymore. They had to give their livestock in order to be able to purchase food. And then, ultimately, they had to give up their land and themselves. That's the pasuk continues in pasuk Yudches. Vatitom ha'shono ha'hi, that year ended. Vayovo elov v'shono ha'shenis. So in the second year, the people came to Yosef and they said, "We don't have any money. We don't have any livestock. Lo nishar lifnei Adoni biltim givioseinu v'admoseinu. The only thing we have left is ourselves, and we have our land." So Yosef says, "Okay, so sell yourselves as slaves to the empire, and give us your land. And in return for that, we'll give you the food which you seek." So the Sfarno understands the first year, which is referenced over here, where they didn't have money, is the sixth year of the famine. The second year, which is referenced over here, means the second year since they ran out of money, and that's referring to the seventh and last year of the famine. Things were so bad after 7 years of famine, or 6 years of famine, that they literally didn't have anything left anymore. They didn't have any money, they didn't have any livestock, you know, they really just had to sell themselves to the crown, to the empire, and that's the only way that they were able to still receive food from the empire of Mitzrayim. That's the Sfarno's perspective, and again, that's the simple pshat in the psukim. Rashi, however, quotes the Maimer Chazal that when Yaakov Avinu came down to Mitzrayim, the famine stopped. That was the bracha that Yaakov Avinu brought down to Mitzrayim. So if that's the case, the famine only lasted 2 years. So if that's the case, to talk about the sixth and the seventh year of the famine is simply unintelligible. There was no sixth and seventh year of the famine. The famine ended after 2 years. So what's this whole story talking about in the Chumash? So Rashi is forced to say that this story really belongs back in Parshas Miketz, which is describing the first and second years of the famine, and the usage of Hashana Hahi, Hashana Hashenis, that year and the second year, doesn't mean the first year since the money ran out and the second year since the money ran out, meaning the sixth and seventh years. It simply means the first year of the famine altogether and the second year of the famine altogether. But everything that's being described over here is really a series of events that really takes place chronologically back sometime in Parshas Miketz. It's Rashi writes on Pasuk Yud Gimel, "V'lechem ein b'chol ha'aretz, chozer le'inyon harishon l'tchilas shnei harov." This whole story at the end of Parshas Vayigash really goes back to the first years of the famine, because after the second year of the famine stopped already. So again, it's important to point out that the Svarno's reading of the Psukim, according to the simple Pshat, is not the way that Rashi reads the Psukim. As we've seen a couple of times already, the Svarno, like many of the Rishonim, doesn't have a problem interpreting the Psukim on a Pshat level, even though certain Mamorim Chazal may not necessarily agree, but he does, you know, show how other ma'amarim, other statements of Chazal, can be found in the simple pshat in the text itself. Again, one such example is where he locates the idea of a yeshiva shem ve'ever, the notion that there was a yeshiva of shem ve'ever, which, again, obviously is not explicit in the psukim. So we saw how the Svarno understood that if you read the psukim carefully, that idea that Chazal have, that shem and ever were involved in teaching monotheism, teaching some form of belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam to a great number of Talmidim, that idea is hinted at in the Chumash itself. Right. So again, I think the question is, you know, what was Yosef's motivation? Right, and basically having the people sell themselves and sell their land, you know, to Paro, to the state, you know, what was he hoping to accomplish by that? So I think, first of all, it's important to put, you know, a little bit of, put the discussion in historical context. In that time, the notion of people selling themselves as slaves was totally normal. In other words, that wasn't something that, you know, again, we can't fathom the notion of slavery. We see it as something, as an institution which is essentially immoral and ethical. It's certainly at odds with the way we like the world to function today. But, you know, in that time, the notion that a person would sell himself as a slave in order to get protection and to get food and to be taken care of wasn't an unusual notion at all. I mean, the concept of an Eved Knaini is ubiquitous, you know, throughout the Torah itself. So in other words, what he was asking them to do wasn't unreasonable, you know, given the idea of the time. You know, one suggestion as to why he might have done this is that he exempted the priests of Mitzrayim from selling their land to the state. So, in other words, there was a concept of a special clergy exemption. You know, if you're clergy, so, you know, we don't impose all of the things on the clergy that we impose on the regular people. In a certain sense, in doing so, he was paving the way for what eventually would become the role of the B'nai Levi, that even when the Jews were subjugated as slaves, so the B'nai Levi were able to claim some kind of clergy exemption. You know, that we're, you know, the same way that the clergy, the priests of Mitzrayim, are exempted from selling themselves and their land to the state, so too the clergy among the Jews should be similarly exempted. And, you know, in doing so, he was kind of paving the way for what ultimately would be something very beneficial for Klal Yisrael and for the preservation of Torah within Klal Yisrael. So, in other words, that's, you know, that's something that, you know, one might attribute to Yosef, in terms of what his motivation might have been to do these things. Okay. All right, we'll stop here. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lezakos es Yisrael.